All right, so what we're going to do today then is talk about search engine optimization. And I'm going to try to give you guys at least a half hour to do your in-class exercise. It took at least that long in the last class, so I'm going to buzz through the slides. All right, so before I even get to the slides, I just want to, you guys read kind of the Beginner's Guide to Search Engine Optimization. That was published by Moz. Moz.com, they are a great resource for SEO information. The founder, Rand Fishkin, is really one of the industry's experts about it, and he's really generous with his knowledge, his content. So on Moz.com, there are tons of videos, tons of articles that you can learn about. So if you're interested in SEO kind of as a skill to build or maybe a possible career path, I highly recommend visiting Moz. Most of my slides have been borrowed from Moz for today, we'll say. Borrowed or stolen, but I'm not selling them, so I'm just going to say borrow. Okay, so when we talk about search, we talk about Google. And yes, there are other players in the market. In the U.S., there's Bing and Yahoo and a whole bunch of other small ones. But in the U.S., Google has 75% of the market share. Worldwide, Google has almost 86% of the market share. And I'm all about making the best use of your time and resources. So yes, you could try to master all the search engines, or you could get about 85% of the way there, figure out how Google works, and just really succeed there. So of course, we'll talk about the other search engines in brief, but we're going to focus on Google because Google is worth focusing on. The other thing I wanted to say, a couple things. One, you'll notice in January of 2015, Yahoo got a little bit of spike in traffic, and it corresponds with a little bit of a decrease in Google. That's because Firefox, the browser, they made a deal with Yahoo, and so they made their default browser, or default search engine, to be Yahoo. So that, you know, all the Mozilla Firefox users of the world were enough to tip the scales just slightly. And then a word about Bing. This is my money-making tip for the day. Do any of you use Bing Rewards? Have you? Okay, so last class nobody had, and I was like, no, this is real, you guys. Okay, so Bing Rewards is this program where you can sign up for Bing Rewards, and Bing basically pays you to use the search engine, and they will give you points. They pay you points, but you can get a certain amount of points, and then eventually trade in those points for Amazon gift cards. I don't know if you've enjoyed any of these rewards. Have you? Yeah, me too. So it's really great if you go to an office job and you maybe you take your time in the morning sipping your coffee at your desk. You can just go to Bing and do 30 searches, and this is the part that's a little bit shady because I'm sure it's against the terms of service, you can search for a bot, a Bing bot, which will just do it for you. And you just click one button and it'll run through word keywords and do all these searches for you. But it's real. And I've bought some really nice things on Amazon from my $5 gift cards that have accumulated over time. And so, one, that's sweet. There's an opportunity. You can make at least 15 bucks by the end of the semester. But also, what a joke, Bing. You're not a real search engine. You are paying people like me to scam you and use your search engine. So I just don't take these numbers are just not real to me because of I've seen the underbelly, I think. All right, so with that, I wanted to show you guys this Google video. This is from Google, just kind of a broad overview of what happens when you do a search. Oops. Okay, so that's Google's process. I'm sure that Bing or Yahoo's or any of the other search engines is very similar. They have a proprietary algorithm that they use to kind of deliver the results after you type in your search terms. So just to review, because we talked about this in the big skinny, but again, as he mentioned, on the side and on the top are ads. That's paid search, which in the big skinny case was called sponsored search. Here in the middle, at the bottom under those, are the organic results, and those are also called algorithmic search or search, and that's where search engine optimization adds volume. So if you're working
pleased to have you here for the marketing talk with Professor Barry
Schwartz. Sorry, guys. That happens sometimes.
Professor Schwartz, we're also very honored to have you here. Thank you for coming. Barry?
I just live in fear that that's going to be an adult video someday. Okay. So the free ones, also called algorithmic search or search engine optimization, are here. That's where, if you're working on SEO, it's to get your results to the top of that list on the bottom. And why? Because really, you can pay to get ad placement, but it's still only 10% of all clicks are going to go to those ads. 90% of all clicks go to these results. This is the lakefront property of the search engine result page, right? This is like the tracks and the wrong side of it, right? So most people are trying to get to this. And of course, position matters. So the in terms of the organic results, the number one result that they show is 42% of people will click on that. And that goes down significantly with every result that you fall under. Yes?
Back to the last slide. I just have a curiosity question.
Sure.
Do people know that I was unaware that they were ads until like maybe a year ago?
Okay.
But I still never clicked on them because they irritated me.
Okay.
Do people just subconsciously know?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think...
people are clearly irritated by them too. But they,
right.
Like, are very, like, it often is the same exact website as my
browser. Right. Yeah. That's a good question, and I don't know the answer, but I think Google, unlike some of the other search engines, tries to make them stand out by putting this little sponsored links thing here. Sometimes they have like shading behind them. But I think it's probably very likely that most people don't know that they're ads. I think that also speaks to the fact that like we are just kind of programmed to recognize an ad even when we don't know it is an ad, right? Because it always just looks different than the natural results. That's a good question. Yes? Yes. Love these. They can. In fact, let me tell you about a time I tried to scam Google. Okay, so back in the early days of advertising, there's two opportunities. One to post ads, and then the other is to put ads on your website, and then you get paid every time somebody clicks on it. So when back in my younger, naive days, I thought, well, that sounds like a super easy way to make money. So I signed up for an AdSense account, and then put the ads on my website. And then I was like, well, like, I mean, if I click a couple times, they're never going to know. No, they definitely know. And they definitely kicked me out of the program for life. And I did not make any money. And now the opportunity has been stolen from me. But that's okay. But so, yes, there's definitely like the scamming part. And I think Google could do that to drive up the price. And maybe in some ways they do. But at the same time, they like their biggest revenue, their number one revenue generator is search ads. So people will stop. You know, they have to keep their customers happy in that. Maybe they're charging a premium, but if it stops working for businesses, they'll stop buying it, right? So it's like that, you just hope that there's checks and balances enough that they wouldn't do that too often. But yeah, it's a possibility. If you think just like a regular person's doing it, they could, like me, but Google catches you. Google's very smart. I would like go to different computers thinking I was so sly. They knew. I don't know how, but they knew. Good question. Okay, so... Again, position matters. You want to get towards the top. I think that's intuitive.
Sorry, with that last
slide, yep.
Is that initial clicks?
Yes.
Like the first click?
That's a good question. Is that initial? I'm thinking this is going to add up to 100-ish, so I'm thinking first click. And I'm sure like people come back, right, if they don't get the results that they want. Yeah, that's a very good point. So nowadays we see, you know, this vertical search, we're seeing more mixed results. So there's images, videos, there's news events. And interestingly enough, people are mostly clicking on news. So 36% of people will click on a news item thinking, so, I mean, I think that tells us something we also know, which is that the internet is an of-the-moment thing a lot of times, and people are Googling something that they maybe heard about in a news story, right? But also what's really interesting is that 31% of people click on images when the results are blended, and almost one out of five will click on a video, 17%. So between images and video, that's almost 50% of the results, which I think really speaks to the power of images. And I think we're only going to see that more and more going forward. So think about when you're building content on the web, how you can get images to show up in results as well. So a couple different ways that Google and other search engines display the results. Google will do this local results. So imagine that I was in Seattle, Washington, and I Googled Thai restaurants. They show your results this way, and this is a completely different algorithm than the normal results that we see. Typically, these businesses have set up what's called a Google Places page so that Google has them indexed as a business. Again, like, well, he did say in the video they don't pay to, you know, bump people up, but like you also wonder, couldn't they? I mean, he said, we'll take him at his word, but there's also opportunities there, right? Like, okay, if people are buying ads, do they get a better placement in the local results? You have to remember those things as well. So this is one way that results are displayed. Also image results, which we just talked about. Video results. And again, this is at the top of Google. You know, you can choose how you want your results displayed. Web, news, video, images, shopping. There's even more. So think about your content. Maybe you really want to show up in the top one or two results for the, you know, web results, which is as general. But also maybe there's real opportunity to improve SEO so that when people filter by videos, yours is closer to the top as well. So think about where it might make sense to focus. There's news and blog results. Here's Bing. And they offer you the same menu on the top here. So you can just look at news stories involving your keywords. Shopping results is becoming more and more popular. Google, I just did this search, obviously, since it's iPhone S or 6S. But they do a great job of allowing you to filter your search results by certain features of the product. So if you're searching, if you're creating data, if you're an e-commerce website, you're selling iPhone 6s, you want to, of course, provide as much data as you can so that these filters are meaningful. And there's instant answers. We're seeing more of that where Google will just provide you the answer that you need. I found that a lot when I'm looking up a term. They'll just give me the definition, which is great. All right, so those are just kind of the different ways that results are displayed. And you guys know that, but it's worth reviewing, thinking about which are more important for your business to show up in. So what can you do to improve your business's results in the organic search results? And again, it's worth mentioning that Google has this algorithm, as do all the other search engines, that they create that's proprietary. So while they certainly are pretty open with much of the information, some of it is kept secret and some of it we'll never know. So SEO is almost a game, is a game of testing, right? So you look to experts like Moz to see what they know about what is working and what Google values at the time. But really, Moz is just a thought leader because they have a bunch of clients and they're doing the same tests. So Google doesn't say, if you want to be a number one, this is exactly what you need to do. But they'll give you ideas about what you can do. But their current algorithm has about 20 different signals or clues, and Matt in the video mentioned some of those are keywords in the title, keywords in the body. If you're interested, I put this image with a live link in the slides I posted on the course website. It lists all of those different signals or clues and tells you what they are. So you can get pretty close to figuring out what matters in the algorithm, but none of us will know the algorithm because it's Google's, right? The other thing is just to remember that because Google owns the algorithm, Google really has a lot of power over results. And so they make updates continuously to the algorithm. A few times every month they make a little small tweak. But a few times in history they've made a total overhaul of their algorithm. And that really literally has made some businesses become defunct. One example is... and you guys might even remember this, but a few years ago, probably, I don't know, like around 2000, I don't actually remember exactly when, but they did the panda, what they called the panda update, in order to kind of stop or to get rid of spammy results. Because for a while, no matter what question you typed into Google, like eHow or some of those other content farm results would come up, and you would click on it because it was the exact words of your question, but it was just some crappy article that meant nothing to you. It didn't provide any real value. And like the first three results were becoming those things. And there were whole companies that built their business model around that, which was basically mining keywords and then providing really simple but keyword-rich articles as solutions. And then, of course, selling ads on their page. And so Demand Media, for example, is a company that that did that. And then when they made the Panda update, which basically penalized companies that were doing that kind of spammy content creation. After that update, some of those businesses just had to go out of business. They had no opportunities left because the search, what they had built their search, what they had built their value on was no longer true. So we see this with social media too. We'll talk later in the semester. But when you're dependent on another company, they can change the terms in an instant and it can change your business model. So what does that mean? It means, one, you want to be paying attention to SEO, definitely. But two, it's just important to create good content. That's where the real value is for your customer. And with good content, you're rarely going to be, you know, suffering at the hands of Google. They're really looking out for spammers and things like that. Another new thing that we're seeing more and more of, and I think this will continue to evolve, but is that Google has a lot of information on each of us individually, and they know, like back in like 2006 when I was trying to scam them, they knew. They still know so much about me. In fact, if you go to google.com dashboard, you can find out what Google knows about you. This is a little infographic from, let's see, Tom Guerra, who's a Wall Street Journal reporter, what he found out Google knew about him. So, like, all of his Gmail conversations, 9,000 YouTube videos that he had watched, all of the apps he had downloaded on Google Play, how many Android devices he had, the passwords they had stored, all of the documents he had created on Google Drive. So, of course, I did this to see what it was, and it was alarmingly accurate. And really, like, you know, holding up a mirror to your internet behavior in some ways. But so Google knows about this about us. And so two people may be searching for the exact same keywords, and they may get slightly different results based on what Google knows. So this is another factor that's making SEO harder. But again, the reason why you should just be providing quality content to help customers. So what are some of the things that you can do for optimizing your SEO or optimizing your search engine result position? Well, you guys read for today the reading from Moz. We'll talk about some of the strategies they mentioned in there. But basically, there's this pyramid, right, where you kind of start at the bottom with a strong foundation. And this is things like building a good website with a good site architecture, making sure that those spiders can crawl your website, having sitemaps, things like that. And again, some of these are technical things that you would rely on a web developer to do for you, but it's good to know what they are. Then there's the keyword research and targeting, where you really have opportunities in the content that you create to create SEO, and we'll certainly talk about that today as we do our exercise. Then there's this idea of link building. So are there legitimate links that are coming into your site? Are other people linking to the content on your site? And are you linking to other people? So again, the internet is the connected web, so are you linking in and are people linking, or are you linking out and are people linking in? It used to be that people would send requests like, oh, you want to do a link trade? Like, I'll put your link on my website if you put a link to my website on yours. And those things are pretty much gone. I mean, I think that's a very spammy way of doing link building at this point. Now it's just about relationships and building good enough content that somebody would actually link to it. And then there's social media, too. Having a presence on social media certainly helps with SEO because of the links, but also just because it's something that Google values. So we'll talk specifically about a couple of these things. Crawlability, which is building the site in a way that allows the spider to crawl it. And this is just what we talked about in the lecture, our last lecture, site architecture. A very clear structure where there's a hierarchy of pages. You know, here you can see there's a home page, it's one of page, and then there's maybe 100 topic pages. And then 10,000 subcategories, and then detail pages. And as you go down, there's more and more pages, but there's a clear line throughout the site. And why that matters is because it makes an easier experience for the user, but it also makes it easier for the search engine to crawl it, the Google bot, as it's called. One thing that's become sort of a no-no online is to create, to have, say, the exact same content in different places on your website, or to create the exact same content as there are in other places on the web. So obviously plagiarizing or stealing content from somebody else and putting it on your site is never a good idea, but also just like writing the same article and just changing a few words here and there on your website is also something that you're typically punished for. Because again, Google's getting smarter. They're trying to provide a good experience for us. They want it to be valuable content. Now, the site architecture also kind of results in the way that the URLs look. a search-friendly URL is very clear. It has a single domain. With if there's subpages or folders, those are also very clear with keywords. So you look at this, nationalgeographic.com/animals/African elephants. You know exactly what you're expecting to see on this page, right? So it's very clear there are keywords in the actual URL. Whereas if you look at a URL like this, it's much less clear. You know you're on National Geographic, but there's this unnecessary subdomain. There's like this strange code that means absolutely nothing to you. So moving away from this towards this will certainly help your search engine optimization. Anchor text is another opportunity where this is basically deciding what text displays when you have a link. So for those of you who know a little HTML, you know that when you put a link, you have the tags, the link tags. You put the actual link location, which in this case is hoghedge.com. But then you get to choose what the text is that displays, that it's usually blue and underlined. And using keywords in here that are descriptive about the content, but you know, and help the user figure out what the link is very important. So we see all over the web, oh, for more information, click here, and click here is the anchor text. That's like the most useless anchor text forever because it doesn't tell you what the information is about, but it also doesn't tell Google what the information is about. So moving away from that to more descriptive anchor text is important. And this opportunity in anchor text and has resulted in some funny, I guess, SEO humor over the last few years. Two instances of what are called Google bombs. I'm just got to check my notes to make sure I get the dates right. But in 2000, I think it was 2004 when John Kerry was running. Yeah, when John Kerry was running for president, conservative bloggers got together and made enough of the links with anchor text waffles. And they bought Google AdWords and they did some other, you know, SEO things, so that eventually when you searched waffles in Google, the first result that came up was John Kerry's running for president page, right? Unless you think this is a partisan humor, it goes both ways, right? So when George Bush was running for office the second time, same kind of people, but on the other side of the line got together and made it, they bought AdWords, they did anchor text, and they found that when you typed in miserable failure into Google, George Bush's biography was the first result. And that, even though it's gone away in Google, Google eventually shut these down because they find out about them. They're called Google bombs. But still, if you like, when I searched miserable failure to get this graphic, like it wasn't far behind. So there's enough people still talking about it online that it happens. But just, you know, is there such a thing as SEO humor? Yes, here it is. Another important part, of course, is the copy that you write on the page. So are you using keywords in the copy on your pages? Here's from Wikipedia, you know, on search engine optimization. Look at all the times I use the word search and engine optimization. So making sure that you're using keywords helps Google figure out what's on your page. And like Matt said in the video, where you use those keywords in the headline and in the body makes a difference. Finally, in images as well, there's opportunities for using keywords. When you post an image to a website, you often have the opportunity to add metadata, which includes what kind of file it is, what size the image is, and then something called alternate text. This comes from accessibility standards on the web, which is making the web browsable for people who are blind, because you can still browse the web if you're blind. You just have an accessibility app or something on your computer that reads out loud to you what the rest of us would just read silently. And when an image is there and you can't see it, the reader, the accessibility app, would just read, it's a photo of African elephant. So that's where this comes out of. So one, doing it is just good for the user experience, but also if your picture doesn't load, it would show the text instead of the picture. But it also gives you the opportunity to maybe be shown or maybe be found as an image result, right? So using good keywords in your alternate text is good for showing your results, your images and results. So SEO is constantly evolving. Google is constantly tweaking the algorithm, as are all the other search engines. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about a trend we've seen in the last 5 years. which is that Google is moving away from exact keyword match. So if you typing in waffle, although that's an exception, but, got John Kerry, now they're like, okay, what are you really looking for? Are you looking for breakfast restaurants? Or, it's trying to really get into what they're calling the searcher intent. Basically, what is the goal of the searcher? What are they trying to find? And so they're moving from exact matching to sort of association by topic. And I'll show you guys a couple examples of what that might look like. Okay, so from 1998 to 2008, they did really specifically exact keyword matching. So if you searched birdwatching sites in Oregon, this would be your number one result, birdtrails.com, because birdwatching sites in Oregon is all in one phrase. And I don't know if you can tell it's bolded from where you guys are sitting. But basically, it's an exact match. So that would be your number one result. As Google matured a little bit, between 2009, and that was really, maybe that was when the Panda update was and they just cut down on those spammers, but they started thinking, okay, people aren't always necessarily looking for the exact keywords, but they might just be looking for a certain topic. And so they certainly still did match keywords, like you can see here, Oregon birding site, and then birding locations is bold. Those are some matches, but it's not exact match. It's moving more towards the person's goal or the topic that they're looking for. And then after 2013, which was another major Google update, it looked more for what are you likely looking to do, or what is your goal? And then, again, of course, looking for matches to keywords, so you can see birding spots and Oregon match and birding here, but also just providing you with local birding information and a page that's probably very relevant to you. So while those other sites may have had the information that the searcher was using for, what Google is trying to do is moving away from those exact matches, which is what so many people were scamming and taking advantage of, to more looking with all of the data that they have at what the person is likely trying to do. And they call that searcher intent. Here's a couple more examples, but I'm going to skip through these. I like this one, though. So after 2013, if you're like, oh, what was that movie with that time-traveling photo booth? Boom, Google knows. It was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Like, they're not looking for this exact phrase anywhere. They just want to tell you the answer. And that's what you want, right? That's most likely what you're looking for. So a couple other changes that we've seen. Google algorithms used to be very focused on the page level. So they would say, okay, when you're searching for the Fermi paradox, this page has the most relevant links, or the most relevance and a lot of links. And they'd say, okay, this page is the next one. And so they would show you a certain page. They've really moved away from that and are now moving more towards looking at the domain level, meaning is the site as a whole quality? Is the site as a whole something that can offer solutions to the searcher? So, for example, here they're saying someone's searching which phone has the best camera, and Google, again, these are like little pop bubbles from Google. Oh, we've seen a lot of searches around this type of topic get positive results from this site, which is CNET. Let's see if we can find a relevant result from it. So CNET is a review site, a customer review site. So it probably makes sense that people searching for the best or which phone has the best camera might find results there. And, a good question that follows is like, well, okay, what do they mean positive results? How does Google measure that? And I think what they do is they measure a few things. One, of course, click-throughs. Did people click on this result? But then also, how long did they stay on the page after they clicked on the result? How did they look at other pages on the site? Or did they just immediately go back and search again? Right? So Google has data on all of that. They know. They're literally tracking our every click. And so they can use that data to make assumptions. So one of the real opportunities for us as marketers who may or may not have a high level of tech savviness is in keywords. Keywords can be used when you're bidding on them to create ads, like we saw in The Big Skinny, but there's a lot of other opportunities for keywords, right? In the body of of your website, in the copy of your website, in the alt image text, in the anchor links, all of the things we've talked about are basically keyword-driven. So I want to talk about the process of what it means to kind of come up with ideas and research your keywords. And you guys started this by putting together an initial list of keywords for class today about a business of your choice. So you kind of collected input, you brainstormed, and you came up with an initial list. That's the stuff that you guys have done on your own. Hopefully you use some of the tools that we read about in like in ZMOD or some of the other resources. But at any point, you're at this stage. What do you do next is you use research tools like Google's Keyword Planner to add more ideas. And then you group these keywords by searcher intent. So whereas people used to group keywords kind of by individual phrases and uniqueness of phrases, now thinking more like Google is, which is about the goal of the searcher. So if you're, for example, looking about keywords at ice cream, a couple of the different intents around ice cream is, okay, I want an ice cream cone right now. Where can I go get one? So people are looking for an ice cream shop. Another one might be someone looking to make ice cream. Another intent might be somebody looking to get a coupon so that when they go to the grocery store later that night or later that week, they get a deal on ice cream. Those are three very different search intents. And so thinking about your keywords in those groups is helpful. Then producing pages that you should create on your site based on those intents. Consolidating pages that might be duplicative about the same intent, but then also thinking going forward what kind of new content you can create based on new information you have or new content. You'll be continually researching keywords, so figuring out how you can move forward with that. So I'm going to skip these next few slides because I realize they don't add a lot of value. And I'm just going to go to an example to kind of show you what I'm talking about. So again, I said that I borrowed most of my slides today from Moz. This example comes from Moz, Rand Fishkin. I should put a picture of him because this would make a lot more sense. But he is the founder of Moz, and he has like a very fantastic mustache. So his example is around mustaches. So he's looking for how can I make my mustache the most evil mustache, evil-looking mustache, right? So here are some of his initial keywords, like mustache products for baddies, evildoers, facial grooming, evil mustache wax, bad guy mustaches, criminal mustaches, villainous men's grooming, okay? So that's his initial list. His first step is to just start Googling around the topic and Googling around some of the keywords he tries. And already he sees, oh, okay, people are using words like infamous and sinister. So he's already getting some new ideas and kind of expansion from searching. Another thing he sees when searching is that a lot of people are looking about what kind of signal a mustache sends. So that might be a great idea for content. Maybe on his website, if he's building this website about evil mustaches, he might want to talk about what signals it sends. He also notices Lyft is a person. Lyft and Johnny Depp are mentioned a lot about mustaches, so those might be potential partners going forward, right? And this is kind of tongue-in-cheek, but certainly a good point in that you can find potential partners as you do the searching. Here he is in Keyword Planner, and you guys are going to get a chance to jump into later in the class. And this is a good point, is that, so he put in bad guy facial hair. And clearly there's search volume for this because he found some results, but Google doesn't always show you the data. They tell you here in these data categories that they don't have it. And this just happened. Some of you are going to see this happen in your own results. Google just shares what it wants to, and it doesn't always share what it has. So sometimes when you don't see results like this, it may be because there aren't enough people searching for that they don't have, Google doesn't have enough information to populate it. That's typically it, but at this point, he can't know from Google are these good search results or good keywords or not. But adding some new keywords into his keyword planner gives him some new opportunities. He hadn't thought about ugly mustache or twirling mustache, right? We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second when we get into planner. And then he groups the keywords by intent. So he knows that people are looking for villainous mustaches. They might be looking for, so they just want to see what it looks like maybe. Then there's people who are looking for products for their own, you know, mustache. There's people who are looking specifically at styles. And then there's people who are looking for the characters with mustaches, right? So these are four different search intents. And you can see he grouped the keywords under each intent. And I think that's a smart way in 2015 to think about keywords and think about the content you create. again, the people searching for these keywords, think about, do they have the same goal? And that's kind of how you group them. So then here he is on his, this is a picture of him, so it makes sense, all this mustache talk, right? Is he's making a page for his website that focuses on tent. So he's talking specifically about styles. You can see he gets to decide up here how the URL looks. But then also he's creating some content that actually is engaging to people, but it also fits with the topics that he's talking about. So he uses keywords in here like, he uses some of the keywords, evil mustache, in the actual content. And eventually, if you do this enough times and you talk about, you use the keywords enough on your site, you will build up a sort of association between your site and a certain product. So here, Beard Brand, they have a constant presence around the web, on social media, on their own site. It means that Google has finally associated mustache products with their site. And so they show up a lot in the ratings. And that's ultimately the goal, right, is that you want to show up a lot in the ratings for certain keywords.